The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. I've got a very special guest on this episode, the man, the myth, the legend, Pete Maina. How you doing, Pete?
I am doing good, my friend. Thanks for having me on. This is pretty exciting.
Absolutely. If you haven't seen it yet, Pete is part of the Muskie 360 app. We've got articles on here. We've got Pete's videos. And the users want to just hear from you. What's been going on with you in the 2019 season, Pete? How's your year been so far?
Well, there's a lot to talk about, I guess. it's pretty long. The more recent fall stuff, I actually really didn't get going this year until about mid-August, where I was doing a lot of it. I generally take time off in July because of the heat. I don't do a lot then, but... It was overall, you know, it's a musky year. You know, somebody once wrote a book called Muskie Suck, and there is a, you know, reason for that. There are highs and lows. There's no doubt about it. But overall, frankly, it was a really good year. And fall, starting with September, I just had a real good fall and finished up with the late season. A lot of deeper presentations, live bait combinations, plastics, and vertical jigging baits. So yeah, a lot of fish. Was a good year. The only big disappointment was we had global cooling, and I don't think I've ever quit this early that I can remember. I literally November 2nd. Was the last day that I was able to fish. There were still some opportunities, but because of business obligations and stuff, I was going to plan a couple more trips and just couldn't do it.
It seems like, you know, it just the last couple years getting cold early. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a late ice out and an early ice up this year. You know, it seems And like you said, we keep hearing about the global warming. Seems like a global cooling on the muskie front, and you know, but you did get up to Loch Sole here recently with Ben Beatty for the catch and relief. If you guys don't know, Pete has a show called Catch and Relief with Sunset Country there in Canada. You guys have some excellent YouTube content and the videos going on. Talk to the audience about what happened there on that Loch Sole trip with that new video.
Well, I'll tell you, Ben is a guy I've known for a long time. He's a guide. He's been guiding for a long time, but from a young man, he started fishing early and guiding and writing. Guy's done a tremendous amount of writing as well. Very knowledgeable, and he's kind of gotten to be a legend up there on Loch Sole. And it's one of those things, you know, I got to get out in the boat with you, buddy. You know, you get to meet people over the years. There's only so much time.
Yeah.
And Ben's one of those guys I've known a real long time, never got a chance to fish with. So we decided we had to make that happen. And we did. And for those that aren't aware, Loch Sole is Canadian Shield Lake, but it's really, you would have to put it on the spectrum of a trophy lake, without
absolutely.
A doubt. It's very low density. So it's not one of those places you're going to go for your first muskie or whatever, but the potential for the giants is there, you know, 40 and even 50-pound fish. So the good news is we had a great time. We caught a couple fish. We did not catch a super giant, but boy did we see some. It was pretty impressive. We had a couple of different windows that were really, really good, and it just didn't quite happen. We didn't actually lose one. A couple of close calls, but you know, they were here, the great big fatties were showing up. Now there was one unique thing that happened that actually has never been filmed before. I did hook one nice fish, about a 4-footer, uh-huh, in the figure eight, totally blind, right, caught me off guard, and I went down on my hinder right after I set the hook, actually, believe it or not, never happened. I've never fought a muskie laying on the deck before, but I did. Yeah.
That's worth the view right there. So if you haven't watched that episode of Catch and Release, even if you're not a fan of Pete's, if you want to see Pete fall on his keister, you know, that's fantastic.
Yeah, if you hate Pete, this is a great show to watch.
That's the episode. That's the name of this podcast episode. Hate Pete. Well, speaking of, and you know, not to get away from the Catch and Release so much, but we were just talking about that early ice up. You posted a picture on Twitter that was amazing a few days ago. You probably know the picture I'm talking about, where you're holding this just super tanker covered with snow. Do you know the photo I'm talking about?
Oh,
and I just
that was a throwback photo that I put out, and it was actually probably 30 years ago.
Uh huh.
And it was on Thanksgiving. That's when we still had global warming. We were able to fish.
Fish.
And we got 6 inches of snow that day.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, I've still measured muskies. I haven't done that in quite a while.
No.
And but I measured that fish in the boat on a wooden ruler. And of course, the boat was full of snow.
Right.
And picked the fish back up, and it had snow all over. Didn't make for a great photo.
Oh, it looks. It just popped in my head to bring that up because that just has that vibe to it. You know, it's about as bad boy as you can get out there in that kind of weather. It's just a phenomenal fish. But as far as obviously season's wrapped for you there, as far as next year's plans, what do you think in 2020? What sort of your thought? Do you think it's going to be an early ice out? Do you think we're just going to have a really bad winter up in the north? Or what's your gut telling you?
My gut's telling me we're probably going to be in for about the same deal. It seems mm-hmm. like these patterns go. We've had a couple years in a row now where it's been late ice out. And I think that's probably going to occur again. Obviously, I have no way of knowing that sure. So it's just a guess, but I'm thinking, and of course, you know, when you get an early start to ice, obviously there's going to be more ice. So even if weather moderates a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, most likely we're going to be looking at that again. It's really been an interesting pattern the last couple of years, but,
Here's hoping. I guess that's all we can do. You know, you just go and also too, it just reminds you, maximize the time you have. You know, make sure you're getting out there on the water because you never want to, it's going to shut down for us. I know, and we talked off air, you mentioned you just got back from a trip off the ice with John Gillespie, and you guys were actually able to target some pike through the ice, though, correct?
Oh, yeah. We generally do that. We try and get a group of people. That way, you know, you can pattern much easier and quicker. And we had about 10 guys, actually. So we did a combination of jigging for panfish, and we set pike tip-ups as well. And this is an interesting thing that I'm sure you've seen at times in your wanderings with muskie as well. Mm-hmm. But you see with all species, it seemed like even though this particular fishery we're on has some bigger pike, in fact, normally we catch pike up to 40 inches, even low 40s in this body of water, they were all small for the most part. We got one fish that was maybe, 32 inches. But we caught a pile, and yet they were all kind of cookie cutter, and I see same thing at times. You know, you get your days musky fishing where there's a pretty wide range of all different sizes,
mm-hmm.
but it's always interesting to me when you see these profound small segments of the size structure where some days you're only seeing 36 to 40 or, you lucky days where you're seeing mid 50-inch fish. Mm-hmm. That's all you're seeing. It's like, where'd the little guys go? Unfortunately, and even on trophy water, which is really weird,
right,
where you're just expecting to see big fish, but it's only dinks showing up. That has always puzzled me, how a certain segment of the size structure can get active when the rest aren't.
Yeah, and I you say that, and I immediately think I've had a couple days on Eagle like that, where you're going to your big fish spots, and it's like 36s all day long. It's like 36 to 40, And then you flip, like you said, on the flip side of that coin, you're coming out, you can't move a fish, but you move 350s, you know, and it's just
right.
nothing but big fish. That is a weird observation. I don't know if anybody's got that answer, though, you know, just the way that shakes out. So one thing that we've been getting a lot of emails about on the app is about Livingston lures. And a lot of that has to do with, you put a video out showing how to use the Headhunter a few months ago, and that's on the app. And for those listening, if you haven't seen it yet, it's under the video section and under the 101 section. But Livingston, you know, it's a really progressive, really inventive company, you know, but somewhat new to the market. Sort of walk me through some of the stuff that you're throwing from Livingston lures that some people may have not seen yet, like the Headhunter. What's sort of your favorite baits right now from that company, and what are you doing with them?
Well, a Headhunter's a pretty unique bait in the fact that it's a swim bait itself by mm-hmm. design, but yet it's got a crankbait lip, so it's kind of a combination thing, and it's real versatile. I've always said, I guess in general, crankbaits are the most versatile bait there is, because essentially you can use them like a jerkbait, and obviously a crankbait you control as well. So that makes them great. But it's a real different action with that particular lure that you get. And the other one that I would say, now, since I've been involved with them, you know, my main job, I don't have anything to do with the sounds. I think that's cool, and that's a somewhat of a separate conversation. My job is to, with the new models that we're designing, is to get the absolute perfect weighting and the best action that we can possibly get, because we know that's a huge factor as well. So that's what I do. Is I, you know, people that have followed me quite a bit see that myself and actually Steve Herbeck does some work with Livingston as well. But we're out there with a bunch of clear baits, and you can see writing on them. Those are our sample baits. So we're testing a whole bunch of different weights and trying to figure things out where we're getting the absolute best action that we can get. And obviously in some lures, we're having different weighted models to cover different depth ranges. But the unique thing that is completely unique about Livingston is that they have a battery and a speaker system inside every lure with biologically recorded fish sounds. And they're distress sounds of prey fish. And essentially, like in the Predator line of the musky lures, now, some of the bass lures, you've actually got three different sounds that you can adjust to within that lure, so you can literally change the different sounds. Now, in the Predator series, like we have for the big baits, now, if you buy a perch bait, that will be a perch distress signal sound in there. Cisco color, Cisco, you know, and all the way on down the line. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
So it's really an interesting thing to have in there, something extra. What it's the one thing where I treat them a little bit different. Obviously, in general, you're trying to work them the same way you would any other lure, right? You're trying to do different things, faster, slower, more pauses, whatever it might be, and you're trying to pattern what actions the fish are in the mood for on a given day. But one thing that adds to the whole picture of triggering is that knowing those lures make noise, I tend to throw in pauses and stuff a little more, especially if I've tried different things, the normal triggering things of speeding up, changing direction, that type of thing. What I may do right by the boat now is just let, especially with a neutral bait or a floater like a topwater, I'm just going to let that lure sit. And I've seen times where, you know, and I could never say for sure, I know I got a strike because of that sound. But I know sound attracts, I know sound matters, and it's just something extra there. That lure's hanging there, and it's slowly sinking or floating up, and it's making noise. So,
wow, that's really cool with the added sound, just that extra little thing to take care of the line, I guess. But, you know, there's some other stuff in the Livingston line. You know, you've got the Rachel, you got the Squeaky Pete. Well, you know, talk to me about those other crankbaits. Is that, like, with the Squeaky Pete, is that just a flat side crankbait? Are you using that in a traditional style?
Yeah, that's a flat side, medium depth crank. And I use that a lot on, you know, obviously rocks and then, of course, suspended weeds a bit. Now, the Rachel, that's a deep diver. So you can get down to, you know, 13, 14 feet with that, and that one's neutrally buoyant. So it's going to, you can really twitch it and get it to hang out there. That's one that I do throw a lot of pauses in, you know, especially at the end of the retrieve with that particular bait. We've had some real interesting things happen with that in watching fish follow and react to those on a pause, but also just a slow pull. I've had some real interesting things with that sound where you just play with the fish at the end of when you haven't been able to figure out anything that'll actually trigger them. And sometimes I'll just let that lure move slow, just barely moving it. And it's funny. I always wonder if they're actually listening to the sound itself or not. The one other lure that I really should mention that, and it's kind of interesting in that in some lakes it seems to be way hotter than others. I would say it's more of a stained water lake lure where it's real effective, but it's called a Viper, and it's a swim bait, and it's a single jointed, but it just has this massive wide swing to it. It's almost like a glider, yet it's a swim bait. You can do a tremendous amount of things with it action wise but the odd thing about that bait is I've probably done better overall using it like a bucktail.
Really?
With all of the fancy things you can do and twitch it and this, that, and the other, I just generally have had the most luck just cranking it in fast. But it's very unique, and it's one of the, I know, Lake of the Woods, well, Lac Seul, we had a ton of action on that on Lac Seul as well. The darker water systems, it's a bait for two reasons, action and sound, that fish just aren't seeing. So it's really out of the norm of what's traditional in musky lures, and obviously a lot of times that's the goal, especially on high pressure lakes. But I got to be perfectly honest, for some reason the action to me doesn't seem to be overall, not that I haven't caught any fish, but the real clear water, it doesn't seem to be as good. I honestly don't know. That's one of those weird anomalies. But to be perfectly honest, darker water, it seems to be better, but it can really be a sleeper. I've had that lure pull out fish when nothing else is working, nothing else at all.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
It's awesome to have your little arsenal of baits like that. You know, when your old school go-tos where you go, nothing else is working, but it's time to get this thing out. And that's so cool to have another idea and another, you know, another innovative musky bait there. And I think that's what's so cool about all those Livingston lures is they really have a keen eye on innovation, which is neat. And one thing I was excited about, and I really wanted to talk to you about on the podcast more than anything, is the Livingston bullet with tubes. That is something that's just got me really excited, the addition to that. Have you had any luck with that yet? Have you really had some serious time to fish with the Livingston bullet in combo with tubes? Or?
Yeah, I have. I was able to get a hold of the bullets. They didn't actually go on sale until this fall, but yeah. I had them early summer, and I don't know exactly when I did the first video on it, but I started rigging up tubes right away. And it's, by the way, the folks that haven't seen them yet, they're inline, so you can put them on any kind of line system or wire system, and then if you want to just clip them on, say attach them to a leader or something like that, you can rig them up that way as well, just by running a wire through it with a loop at the top. So you can clip on. We've been running them with live baits and vertical jig baits and stuff like that as well. And the first time I actually tried them heavily was spring pike fishing last winter in March. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and there's no doubt the first real test was with dead baits pike fishing, and we had sets with and sets without, and there was no doubt what was going on there. It's not that we didn't catch any fish on the ones without the bullets, but it was about 3-1.
Wow.
So I think you're sucking, you know, you're pulling fish in from a little farther away that, you know, in a lot of cases wouldn't have otherwise seen the bait. And obviously then they got to make up their mind if they think it smells good. But a dead bait's a dead bait, right? It's not doing anything else. So
cool.
You can,
just the fact that you bring that up and say that you had two dead baits out there and you're seeing a preference 3-1, because, you know, as musky anglers, it's a lot. Often it's hard to judge. You know what I'm saying? If you and I are throwing the exact same bait at the same time, we will have different results due to minutia in our cast and retrieve. But I mean, that's staggering that it's, you know, here's two dead baits setting flat and that it called them in. And, you know, I think that's such a really exciting addition that, like you said, with the tubes, with anything, just to add that extra element, it really seems like something that I think this next coming year, you know, because it seemed like you said it sort of came out late this season that a lot of people need to look at. And with that being said, you can get a lot of the, I know we're talking the Livingston product here, but all of these are available through our great sponsor, the Musky Shop. So you can go muskyshop.com or visit through the app and check out all the Livingston stuff. And one reason I wanted you to be on the podcast, Pete, we've got a ton and ton of emails from people on our feature Ask a Pro. And there's not too many people in the musky game that are a bigger professional than yourself. So we're going to put you on the hot seat to answer some of these questions.
Oh, no.
If this guy can't answer them, you're in trouble. So we're just going to fire away at him. Brandon wants to know, I'm looking to upgrade my electronics on my boat. What are your thoughts on side imaging versus just standard sonar? Would the addition of side imaging be worth the added costs?
That I would say absolutely. And you know, there's different units out there, but one thing I would suggest would be the if you're interested in taking that extra step, I do think it's worthwhile for the price difference. The Hummingbird Helix is a very reasonably priced unit, and they have awesome imaging on there. And frankly, I'm a little behind some guys in using the side imaging as far as actually spotting the fish. I haven't gotten to that point yet, being old school like I am. I like to go and pattern things and do things the way I've done for a long time. So I'm looking at that while I'm fishing, but I generally will not go and use the side imaging first before I fish an area or just to spot fish. I know there's quite a few people that are doing that, and it's much more effective in more gradual breaks and sand areas and defined weed edges, those types of things where you're actually able to graph individual fish. But the technology is amazing. And then the other thing that is great about having the side imaging on there and paying attention to it is, in a lot of cases, you're marking things that you just wouldn't otherwise see. You see fish cribs and trees and stuff like that off to the side of the boat. In some cases, you might have been aware of it, but especially if you're on new water or you're fishing a spot where you didn't have the imaging before, you're gonna learn things that you didn't even realize were there. And then with the technology, what you can do is you can actually go ahead and mark that and put a waypoint on it if you want. You know, right on the unit, as soon as you see it, you can stop that, get a waypoint on it, and come back and fish it later. And you've got that potential to literally go and scan areas and find fish that maybe aren't active at the time, but you can come back on them later again on a window. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty impressive technology. And I've seen some guys now that are doing night fishing who are literally seeing fish come in and are realizing that they need to continue figurating because they've literally seen a fish come in on side imaging. So that's obviously a real important thing.
Oh, 100%. And 100%. The new side imaging tech is amazing. And it's going to be interesting to see how that tech grows, you know, in the future. It's just more and more amazing, cool stuff. But, Pete, the next question we have up is Johnny T. He wants to know, when should I be adding extra weight to my tubes, and how do you rig yours to be suspending?
Oh, very simply, when, you know, you want to get a little deeper. And the Red October tubes originally were designed for vertical jigging in the Niagara River. And In those cases, you want to get down to at least a 3 ounce head, and you may want to add a little extra weight if you're actually building your own. Now on the neutral stuff, that's it generally depends on the tube, but anywhere from a half ounce to an ounce. You know, you can rig tubes to where they're literally almost like a top water lure. You can run them in the top couple feet of the water column, mm-hmm. actually popping out of the water a little bit as well. They can be real effective as a shallow bait, and you could rig them single, and they can do pretty good in the slops and pretty heavy cover as well. And it's just a matter of, toying around with them. If you're rigging your own baits, and I know they offer different weight systems with the tubes that, come rigged, obviously, but I've always built my own, and it's just one of those things that you really need to play around with a little bit. But definitely more weight as you go a little deeper, and if you're working current and vertical jigging, you probably want to have a minimum of 2, but most likely 3 ounces or more.
Absolutely. And he sort of asked, how do you rig them suspending? Do you use any cork in your tubes, or are you just eliminating weight and sort of letting them suspend on their own a little bit?
I'm generally just eliminating weight. I've never had to put any flotation into anything. Right.
And I think, Johnny, as per your question, though, your circumstances might call for that. Just play around with it. I think a lot of this stuff is created through necessity, to overcome certain circumstances. And there's no wrong way to fish any of this stuff. So just play around with those weights and some flotation if you got to. Next question up is from Lance. Great question. What factors do you consider before making the decision between trolling and casting?
Very simply, the efficiency end of it. If I've got a body of water I haven't fished before at all, trolling by far is the most efficient, because at least you're fishing while you're learning, and you would want to set lures shallower in those cases, even though the lake might be a little bit deeper. But you don't want to be getting snagged while you're learning if you really don't know the lake all that well. That's just a good place to start. And then just bigger areas, bigger bodies of water, something that's flat as far as break lines and stuff like that. Trolling is just so much more efficient because you can cover the water more effectively. Suspended muskies, no doubt, for the most part, you can cast them. Muskies will bunch up heavily suspended at times, and what I recommend to people, even on big bodies of water like, say, Lake St. Clair or Mille Lacs or something like that, or the Bay of Green Bay, if you're a real hardcore caster, what you can do is troll first. If you locate a fish, if you catch a fish or lose a fish, there's most likely more than one there, so you can drop a waypoint, you can turn around then and start casting them. But if it's big areas, big sections of water, just trolling is so much more effective overall to cover water. Where I get away from it, I don't think it's efficient, is when it's real sharp breaks, and especially if the fish are edge-related. If you've got real sharp breaks and you've got a lot of irregularities in and out, you can't troll that stuff effectively, especially those fish that are sitting on inside turns with sharp breaks. You literally can't get in there for those fish well. Those are places you really need to pick apart by cast.
All right, Pete, and the last question we got is from David L. David asks, how do I get dialed in on a muskie bite? I've never felt dialed in, and I always feel like I'm behind the patterns. What would you what's your best advice to help someone get dialed in and stay ahead on a muskie pattern?
Well, that can be a real long story, but just in general, you really want to have a feel and be watching for what the fish are telling you in any instance. And sometimes, even for guys like me that have been doing it for years, it's really not all that doable, because there won't be specific patterns to structure and location and lure type and that kind of thing. But actually, more often than not, there is. So what you want to do, if it could be cabbage weed, it could be a certain type of weed, it could be a break from one weed to another type of weed, could be rocks, it could be whatever, but pay a lot of attention to where the active fish are coming, emphasizing active fish. Is there wind coming in? Is it the slack side? Any of those things that can give you a clue as to where these active fish are located. And then what you need to do is really pay attention to that, because there's a lot of times that that is going to be the same pattern all over the lake. And the one thing you want to avoid is just fishing spots because you think they're good or you've done good in the past. Go with what the fish are telling you. So a lot of people, after they've got a good clue, they won't drive by two or three good spots where they've seen the caught fish before that don't actually match the pattern that the fish were telling you. You wanna stay with that pattern, whatever it might be, structure-wise and lure-wise. If it's working, you just want to do the same or as much as possible of the same thing where you're seeing those active fish, this lure type on that same structure, other areas in the lake that have the same thing, bypass the other stuff. That's how you take advantage of the windows by far the best, rather than just, you know, hitting spots because you think they're good. I don't know. That really doesn't sound like the greatest explanation, but it's paying attention to those patterns. It's such a long story.
It is, but you're right on the money, though. You're right on the money.
Pay attention to what they're telling you. It's amazing how you can have a body of water with five or six different predominant weed types, and only one weed type will have the active fish in it. Mm-hmm. Fish those.
And just to add to that just a little bit, like you said, this could go on forever, but also too, that comes down to knowing your lake. No, you need, once you find that first pattern, you need to know immediately XYZ is where I'm going, because that's a similar situation to what I just contacted a fish on, you know, and then there's a lot of knowledge there, but man, that's a great and concise answer. And I'll tell you, Pete, I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking to the Muskie 360 users. I know we've got a lot of exciting stuff coming our way to the app from you. You know, and everybody's just jazzy. You're a part of it. And thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to everybody.
Well, absolutely. I've enjoyed it and look forward to doing it again. And I will say the app is awesome. I mean, the moon information on there, that's a huge focus, obviously, for all of us that do a lot of this. And it's nice to have a real simple answer now. I get asked a lot, well, what's the best app? And now I can only say that that is the best app, without a doubt.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.